The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Sirius XM Channel 80, wherever you get your smart speakers or podcasts. Do you get your smart speakers and podcasts in the same place, Roger? Those two different things?
Yeah, I think you can. Yeah. Both same place.
Luca got the dough, boy. 207 mil. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. Got me to thinking, is Luka even first-team All-NBA? He's an incredible player. He's like a miraculous player. Is he even first-team NBA? Going to get into that a little later, say ESPN. But I don't know. By my lights, you got Steph at the 1, Harden at the 2, KD at the 3, LeBron at the 4, Giannis at the 5. Where does Luka fit in there? The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests, join me on the Goodyear Hotline. First, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. So, Luka signs 5 years, $207 million, super max rookie extension with the Mavs. Luka, I mentioned Harden, I have it too. Luka is sort of like James Harden, but clutch, right? Like, Luka's a 28-8-8 guy in the regular season. And in the playoffs, he's like a 36-11-8 guy, something like that. He's 22 years old. First player eligible for the designated rookie max extension upon signing, because he's already twice been voted first team All-NBA. The deal includes a player option in the final year. Look, is he first team NBA? Is he a point guard? Is he a point guard or is he a point forward? You can play him at the 1, at the 3. Let's forget about all that. Let's just say you have to make a team, because it's kind of positionless, right? Like, you do need some guy who can play the 5 either in the modern way or whatever, but Luka is one of the 4 other guys, whether you call him a 1, 2, 3, or 4, right? He has a size where you can call what's really a power forward nowadays. But is he one of the 4 best non-centers in the game? He's been on 2 first teams. You taking him over LeBron or KD? I don't think so. So there are 2 spots left. So you're taking him either over Harden or Steph or Giannis. It's gangster out there. Maybe over Embiid or Jokic or AD, I guess. It's just not easy to be first-team All-NBA, but he's made it twice. That's why he's eligible for the $207 million. Now, obviously, Luka got paid. What does it do for the Mavs? What does it mean for the Mavericks? See, here's the thing. Mark Cuban is perceived as a team-friendly, like player-friendly owner, right? At least that's how he's perceived. The Dallas Mavericks play in a glamour city. Dallas is a glamour city. It may be on the bottom of the totem pole of glamour cities. It's not New York or LA. It's not as big a market as Chicago. It's not as, international portia market as San Fran. Is obviously not Silicon Valley. It's not Miami, but it's a glamour market. Like, when I was a kid, there was a show called Dallas on TV. Well, no show called Houston. It's called Dallas. I didn't see San Antonio. Who shot JR? It was Dallas. Dallas is a glamour city, and it's a warm weather city. And you have a team-friendly owner, and you're in a no-income tax state. You know why that's significant? Because there is a max contract in the NBA. So how do you get more? Well, you don't pay state income tax for those games you play there. And you reside there, obviously. Now, because of all that, Mark Cuban, who I thought made a really good hire when he brought in Nico Harrison, the Nike guy, who has a sterling reputation around the league. Like, everyone loves the guy, and he's considered super smart. And you bring him in, considered a Kobe guy. Is there any other Kobe guy running a team well? A glamour market well? Like, Rob Pelinka seems to be doing a pretty damn good job. And Nico Harrison's considered a guy who can get it done. Now, there's a connection there with Jason Kidd, who's the coach, right? You have player-friendly front office and coach situation in a glamour market, which is warm weather, no state income tax, player-friendly owner, and you have a singular superstar in Luka signed up for the long term with nice role players and role player pluses, like Tim Hardaway Jr. actually turned into a really good player. They have some nice players. What they don't have is another superstar, and that's Mark Cuban's job. Nico Harrison, yes, Jason Kidd, whatever, Mark Cuban. It's his job. He has to make sure that the Dallas Mavericks have a real chance to win. And that does not mean, look, if there was a league where there were no big twos even, right, there were no two superstar teams, then maybe Luka wouldn't need another superstar. But we're dealing in a league with at least two, maybe three big threes. And I'm not talking about Milwaukee. I mean LeBron, AD, and Russ. I mean, obviously, KD, Harden, and Kyrie. And you could even maybe squint and see it in Philadelphia. Sorry, in Philadelphia. In Phoenix. With CP3, Booker, and DeAndre Ayton. Maybe less there, but still, I think the way DeAndre Ayton played in the playoffs qualifies. A lower-level big three, but still. Giannis, yes. Middleton and Drew Holiday, I guess the way they played in the Olympics. But, you know, like, those guys were getting creamed by the Nets. They were getting waxed by the Nets. And not even by the Nets. By two-thirds of the Nets, they were getting waxed. So Luka really does need at least one crime partner. At least one. Can that be Porzingis? You know, time was, I believed Kristaps Porzingis could win an MVP, could be the best player in the game. He's a 7'3" unicorn. He's 2 inches taller than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, a defensive terror, at least on the Knicks he was. He completely changed the other team's offense when he was on the floor. Shot blocker, back then he could defend in space. Can put the ball on the floor at 7'3" against other bigs and can bomb threes. Oh my God, his future. Then he got hurt and he kept getting hurt. And the truth about Kristaps Porzingis is every year he has to spend the whole year getting back to where he was the year before, so he never progresses. He's not a reliable number two to Luka. And remember, in a league with big threes, you need at least a number two. Adrian Wojnarowski, ESPN NBA insider, of course, on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin this morning.
You look through the years with Dallas, when they've had cap space, they've gone after, you know, kind of those A-list free agents at kind of different periods. They've never really landed them. And there's a lot of things that players should like about Dallas. It's a big market. You've got a committed owner in Mark Cuban. State taxes in Dallas and Texas, you know, all of those factors, you know, that should lead players there. They've never really landed, you know, the big-time A-list free agents. You would hope with Luka Doncic, when they get to a point where they might have max cap space, that he's the kind of guy that guys are going to want to play with.
Yep. Although Stephen A. Smith brought up today on First Take that Doncic complains that the refs has a problem with Porzingis. Maybe something, you know, hearing, maybe there's some buzz around the league. Maybe they don't want to play with Doncic. Ball dominant. I disagree. Doncic has the kind of swagger that champions have. And he was, remember, a champion in Europe at like the age of two. He dominated that league at the age of two and then came over here. Doncic to me is a taller, more clutch version of James Harden. Like, what does that sound like to you? Taller, much younger, more clutch version of James Harden. That sounds like a guy who's pretty soon going to be the best player in basketball. James Harden, I thought. I mean, James Harden right now is better than Luka still, because James Harden was playing basketball better than anyone on earth during the regular season, game for game. But Luka has that kind of ability, but he's taller, kind of more confident under pressure, and much younger, just 22 years old. You don't want to play with that guy? You think there's someone out there that the Mavs can target. But again, I just want to, like, just think about this. Not one guy. They need minimum one other superstar. Superstar. AD is an MVP caliber player. So is Harden. KD and LeBron have other MVP caliber players. So let me give you an example. They get Bradley Beal. Nope. Not enough. Luka and Bradley Beal's not enough. Bradley Beal, not an MVP caliber player. Really good player. Great player. But Bradley Beal, you don't look at him and go, oh, he should be the MVP. If it's Bradley Beal, you need more. And Bradley Beal is great. It is gangster to put together a championship roster in the NBA. But Mark Cuban's got to do it. That was Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Carmelo Anthony says LeBron James's pitch to join the Lakers was simply the time is now. Here's
LeBron came to me one time and just said, yo, the time is now. Like, I want you. We got to make this happen. And, you know, I took that information and took that, you know, that dialogue and took my time with it and, you know, weighed all the options that I was weighing at that time. And, you know, I just felt like for right now, I think this was the best time.
Well, here's the thing. I know people think I hate on Carmelo. I really don't. I'm really rooting for Carmelo. You know, when I was a Knicks fan back then, Carmelo Anthony was the only superstar in my lifetime, to say I want to come to the Knicks. He is the only one in my lifetime to say I want to come to the Knicks. So I wish the best for him. But the fact is, is someone waiting on the line, Raj? I just got something in my ear. Oh, there he is. There he is. You know what that music means. It's time for Father Knows Best with Michael Thompson, Lakers play-by-play man. Michael, I'm talking about Carmelo Anthony, and I want to say something about winning a championship and what it means for legacy. I think Carmelo should be a walking reminder to Russell Westbrook that Russ got to get a championship, and soon. Because, Michael, it is my judgment that once you are no longer in your prime, once you're no longer one of the two or three best players on a team, winning a championship doesn't mean the same in terms of your legacy. Gary Payton's championship in Miami is not the same thing as Isaiah Thomas's in Detroit, right? And so I hope Carmelo can be a spark for the team, maybe as a sixth man or whatever, and help them win a championship. But I think he should be a reminder to Russell Westbrook, all the numbers in the world are not going to mean as much as if you can win a championship while you're still great. What do you say to that, Michael Thompson?
Well, in a way, you're right. I mean, when you are the man, when you are the face of a franchise and you lead that team to a championship, yeah, it does put you at a different level. When you're Hakeem Olajuwon, when you're Jordan, when you're Kobe, Shaq, or when you're Magic, people like that, when you're Kareem, when he was in Milwaukee, of course. So, yeah, there are different levels to it, but when you contribute to a championship team as a role player later on in your career, it still sort of solidifies your legacy. Even though you weren't the real main reason why you won it, you still had a lot of help in delivering that championship, and you have that on your resume, Max, when you retire as a championship player. Because when you talk about legendary players who never won a championship, you never put Gary Payton's name in there because he won one with Miami, so he got it done. So he's out of that never won a ring club.
Right.
So that still means a lot when you retire.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that, Michael Thompson, ESPN Lakers play-by-play guy here on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. I would say that's right. Bill Walton was useful to the Celtics winning championships off the bench, but he had won one as the guy in Portland, won the MVP. So he's all right. But when it's Gary Payton, who's one of the all-time greats, Gary Payton gets left off too many lists of the all-time greatest point guards. But I think that's because, Michael, he didn't win it when he was at his very best. He won it kind of after the fact. Jason Kidd is, to me, like in the spectrum of how much credit, let's say, a point guard gets. Isaiah Thomas gets all the credit. He won two in his prime as the best player on the team. Jason Kidd gets some credit. He was still an excellent player, but no longer at his best when he won the championship. But it counts-ish, right? And then Gary Payton III gets left off those greatest of all time, you know, debates, top five and everything, because he won it after the fact. What do you think it would do for Carmelo's legacy? Like, what would Carmelo have to do on this team to, number one, help them win a championship, and number two, get credit for it?
Just play the way he played in Portland. He was a very vital member to that team. He was a role player, knocking down key shots. He's going to do that for the Lakers. He's going to be revitalized because he's playing with his best friend, LeBron, and with Anthony Davis and with Russell Westbrook, playing with three Hall of Famers. He's a Hall of Famer himself. So he's going to feel like he's 27 and not 37. And this solidifies his legacy. If he can deliver a championship here, he's got four gold medals, I believe. I think maybe four. He's got an NCAA championship. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. And now he gets to be an NBA champion too, hopefully. I mean, this solidifies him among the greats of the greats, buddy.
I would say Carmelo Anthony was really best suited his whole career to be the second best player on a championship team. And he was often cast as the best player on a championship team because it's hard to find players better than him, really. But I do think I agree with you that it would help him to win. I don't know exactly how they do it, Michael, but I want to get on. But let's talk about that. Russell Westbrook every year spends the first half of the year not looking great, and we all go, oh, he's past it. He's not a great player anymore. He's lost half a step, whatever it is. But when you look back at it, it's because he has to adjust to new teammates every single year. Then once he does and figures it out, in the second half, he plays at MVP level, right? Do you think that Russell Westbrook is underappreciated at this point in his career?
Oh, heck yeah. The man averaged a triple-double for 4 years in a row. Who does that? Not even the great Oscar Robertson or the great Michael Jordan could do that. And this guy is sort of underappreciated or disrespected after what he's done for 4 years in a row because we've been so enamored with three-point shooters. You know, that's the new wave now, the new rage in the NBA. You got to knock down your threes. That's the only way you can win a title these days. But what Russell Westbrook has done is unprecedented. Even Will Chamberlain never did it. Bill Russell, and he's the only guy in the history of the league to do it. So, yeah, he's definitely been disrespected or underappreciated for what he's done. And now that he's with the Lakers, Max, he doesn't have to do it every night. He can relax and pace himself because he's got two great players, or three of them really, to feed off of, and they all share the responsibility. Now, his role's going to be even easier playing with LeBron and Anthony Davis and Carmelo.
Michael, you think Russell Westbrook's going to relax? That dude doesn't know how to relax. That dude knows how to keep it 100, as the kids say. And I mean on the court. He is full throttle all the time. It's the reason I love to watch him. He's not going to be able to relax. He's just goes full speed. He has one speed.
Well, what I mean by relax is he doesn't have the weight of the world on his shoulders. He doesn't have to carry a team anymore like he had to in Washington, like he had to in Oklahoma City after Kevin Durant left. So relax in that regard where he'll still go out there and play with his eye energy, but he knows that he doesn't have to carry the team every night. That'll make him relax.
By the way, when you bring up Jordan not doing a triple-double, Michael Jordan played in an era where no one whiffed a triple-double because of the way the game was played. He averaged 32-8-8 on 50% from the floor 1 year. If he were playing today, or in Oscar Robertson's time, either one, he would have averaged easily 35-plus points. He did that one season, 37 points. He would have averaged 40 points in a triple-double. Like if Jordan was playing today, it'd be a joke. This is Father Knows Best with Michael Thompson on the Goodyear Hotline. Are you concerned at all, Michael Thompson, with the age of the Lakers? It's been made a big deal about. I am not as concerned as others. I'm concerned with spacing because of the lack of real pure shooting on the floor. But I'm not so concerned with the age. Where do you come down on that, age and shooting?
Not anymore, Max, because now guys are load managed, not so much by sitting out games, but how many minutes they play. They don't practice as much now. And off days, they're allowed to rest. So Frank Vogel's good about maintaining and managing these guys' minutes. LeBron's smart about it. So they'll know how to manage it. Even though these guys are in their early 30s to mid-30s to even late 30s, they're all in great shape. They're all the epitome of professionals. So they'll understand how to manage their minutes, and they'll be fine.
The great Michael Thompson, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about, actually, you know what, Raj? Michael Thompson was on Max on Boxing. That's right. He actually came on. Not just we're going to talk about it when we had Michael Thompson on. Were you in the Bahamas already when you came on, Michael?
I was flying out that night, so you got me as I was packing to go to the Bahamas.
Excellent, excellent. The great Michael Thompson.
Hey Max, yes. speaking of boxing, before you go,
yeah.
Here's the difference between boxing and UFC. Now, what is the two heavyweight fights we are clamoring to see, Max? One of them in boxing is Joshua Fury, right?
Correct.
You agree with that?
Correct.
And in the UFC, the heavyweight fight we're clamoring to see now is Gane versus Ngannou, right?
Gane, yes. Gane and Ngannou, yes.
Gane. Now, here's the difference. When Fury and Joshua fight each other, they're going to make $100 to $150 million apiece each.
Mm-hmm.
Easily. When Gane and Ngannou fight each other, what are they going to make, $1 million?
But there's a reason for that. It's because the UFC cost controls at the top of the sport, and as a result of that, has a larger middle class than boxing, and also is more readily able to deliver the fights fans want to see. Boxing, because it's a bunch of independent contractors looking out for their short-term interests, and there are no labor controls at all in terms of salaries, in terms of paydays. Is better for the performer, right? But worse for the fans in a sense because it's harder to get the fights we want to see. If Terrence Crawford and Errol Spence both fought in the UFC, they'd have fought already three times, you know? But in boxing, we don't get the fight. I'm all for fighters making money, but like that's just the – I just want to – like if we're just describing and analyzing why, that's the reason.
The bottom line of this is Gane and then Ngannou should have gone into boxing, not UFC.
Well – Francis Ngannou wants to box. Michael Thompson, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah.
Think Emmanuel eventually box? I'd love to see that.
I know Francis Ngannou wants to box. Well, you know, we should have Francis Ngannou on the show, Raj. I should have the heavyweight champion in the UFC on the show. After all, we have the heavyweight champion of basketball commentary, Michael Thompson, on the show all the time. The great Michael Thompson, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Michael. This is the Max Kellerman Show coming to you live from the Seaport District at Pier 17, brought to you by Chase. Coming up, do the Cowboys have a big problem already? Already! Ooh, you know Hard Knocks debuting tonight, 10 o'clock. Get your popcorn ready. Did you know the arrow in Amazon's logo represents A to Z? Maybe the My Computer Career logo should represent unemployed to employed. Ryan was out of work when he started classes in March. Remember, I keep telling you, hey, in 4 months, April, May, June, July, for a little over 4 months. In September, he started his IT career working for Amazon, making more money than he ever thought possible. Here's a prime opportunity. Go to mycomputercareer.edu and take the free career evaluation today. And you could start your new life as an IT pro in as little as 4 months. It's not rocket science. It's mycomputercareer.edu. Trouble in Big D?
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, Sirius XM Channel 80. 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Concern in Big D. Dak Prescott, he of bad shoulder, is dealing apparently with, quote, more of a baseball injury, but is still expected to be ready for week one. Per Glazer, the injury is, quote, kind of under the armpit. And the Cowboys training staff actually got in touch with the Texas Rangers for, quote, just a little more help. Michael Irvin on the Doomsday podcast is worried about Dak. Listen.
I am a bit concerned that this thing may be a little bit more serious than they're playing on to. I watched Dak today, right, taking snaps, doing his draw. He still used his off arm. Now, that means you use your off arm to throw that ball 2 yards in front of you. If you can't crank up 2 yards right now, why am I to believe in, you know, 2-3 weeks you can get up 60 yards? I don't know. I'm a bit concerned.
There's more than a little buzz about with former Cowboys legends being concerned about Dak Prescott, and they're reading the tea leaves here. They're reading between the lines. They're saying, wait a minute, for him to be held out like this, for them to be saying that, and they have more experience than we do with this stuff from the inside. That should be alarming to Cowboys fans. Jay Glazer, good job. By the way, Jay is a great dude. Like, anytime, last time I saw Jay Glazer, I was in a hotel in Beverly Hills. I forgot what event I was covering out. We were both out there for some reason. And he can see that my I have herniated discs in my back, so I'm always trying to stretch it out. Jay just stopped what he was doing and gave me 15 minutes of these stretches. Like, I didn't know two or three of them. That, like, 15 minutes of these complicated stretches to stretch out my back, and they were good. Anyway, Dak's injury is supposedly gone from, you know, day to day to week to week, and it's now not even considered a traditional kind of football injury. So he left practice. He left the practice field July 28th with a shoulder injury. So what are we now? August 11th? It's the last time he threw a pass. And they keep backing up. The Cowboys keep backing up the timeline for his return. And don't forget, Troy Aikman said, what did Troy Aikman say? He said, quote, the Cowboys are downplaying it. This precedes the Michael Irvin sound you just heard. The Cowboys are downplaying it, but I think when your franchise quarterback is missing the amount of time he's missing, I tend to think it's probably a little more significant than what they've let on. Meantime, Daniel Jones is going to have Saquon Barkley back and a revamped offensive line, an excellent defense, weapons everywhere you look. Ooh, Boy, that play action with a mobile quarterback and Saquon catching passes out of the backfield and taking it to the house. The threat alone, Raj, keeping defenses honest. You can't load the box. Oh, the Giants are going to win this division. My New York football Giants will win this division, and I think the Cowboys are coming in third. Okay? It's going to go Giants, Washington, Dallas, Philly. That's right.
Well, you got Philly Lash. You got that part right.
Shemay in Connecticut. You're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, you are totally wrong with that list right there. Like, that's blasphemous there. Mm-hmm. Come on. The Cowboys are always going to be first. They had the best offense in that division. Mm-hmm. Then you got your Giants. Then it's going to be Washington. Then it's going to be Philly. I don't think – I think Dak Prescott will come off from this catastrophic injury and come out stronger.
Yeah. See, the problem with what you're saying, Shemay, and did I say your name right finally? Every day I butcher it when you come on. At any rate, the problem with what you're saying is every year I hear this from Cowboys fans. You know, the Giants quarterback suffered an injury too last year. High ankle sprain, which we know is a serious injury. Bad hammy. Stayed out there. You know what Joe Judge said? Head coach said 90% of NFL players would have been on the IR. Daniel Jones, a really tough guy, as is Dak. Dak's a tough guy. And so is Daniel Jones. Both mobile, both can throw the ball. Dak's better than Daniel Jones. And the Cowboys will have a better offense than the Giants, but the Giants will have a much, much better defense than the Cowboys. And the Giants will have a much better offense than Washington. You know, Washington has the defense, the Cowboys have the offense, Philly has nothing, and the Giants have both. Which team do you like? Which team do you like? By the way, last year, Cowboys and Giants, both 6-10. Mike in Texas, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, well, I'm Max. You're Mike. Okay. Go ahead.
So, I like what you said earlier about Russell Westbrook. Sorry to go from football to basketball, but mm-hmm. I think this pairing with LeBron James and AD is special because of IQ. Mm-hmm. Not to discount IQ necessarily with his former teammates, but there's not going to be the IQ pressure to do everything for everyone that Russell Westbrook is, you know, had to do these past couple years without KD and stuff like that. Mm. So having the pressure taken off of him, you're absolutely right, man. He's not slowing down. He's a one speed guy. It's good when it's good. Sometimes that one speed has got him into some situations where people think that Oklahoma City didn't win because of him, and then he couldn't win in Houston because of him. And I just think that's a horrible narrative. I don't think any of those were necessarily all his fault. He played with a bunch of primo divas that only know how to take shots. They don't know how to lead teams. They don't know how to win games if it's not taking a shot. And that's great that you can take a shot. This is IQ, and he won't have to be forced to carry the team, make all the plays, make the rebound, make the assist. He's going to have.
I agree with your assessment in that. I think people look at Westbrook and think he's a stat stuffer. Like, he wants those rebounds. He wants the triple-double. I'm sure players do. But the same thing was said about – and really, you know what the real criticism about Westbrook is? He doesn't shoot it well. People don't realize how much of that colors the way they think about him. If Russell Westbrook shot 37% from three – he'd be in the conversation for greatest player who ever lived. He's just not a great pure shooter. And I will say he's going to help the team in transition because LeBron and AD are old, are like AD's injury prone, a little creaky. LeBron's old, but they're athletes. Not by NBA standards at their age or whatever. They're athletes, period. Those two, LeBron and AD out on a fast break with Russell Westbrook pushing it? Oh, Lord. Now, here's the thing. James Harden, how's that going to work with Kyrie Irving? Now, they all shoot the ball, him, those two, and KD, and Joe Harris, too. But the question was, could they coexist in the backcourt? And what about Harden, who's used to averaging 35-12 or whatever? You know, Harden was fine. Harden showed when he was played with Kyrie and KD, no, I wasn't doing that to stuff the stats. I was doing that because that's what my team needed me to do. Now you need me to average 23 points and 12 assists instead of whatever, you know, 35 points and 8 assists? Okay, that's what I'll do. And he was magnificent, best basketball of his career. Now Russell Westbrook is in a position where, you're right, he doesn't have to do anything, and we will find out what kind of player he really is. Is he a team player or a selfish player? My prediction is he's always been a team player. That doesn't mean he's always done what's right for the team, but I'll bet that he's always done what he thought was right for the team at that point. None of us know exactly what's right, only in hindsight, and even then. You do what you think is right. I think Russell Westbrook has done that. And I think now, playing on a team with LeBron and AD, we'll see his true colors. What are his true stripes? I think they're of a winning player. But we will find out. And by the way, if they don't win, it won't necessarily be because Russell Westbrook won't play the right way. It's because LeBron is not a shooter. AD is not a shooter. Westbrook's not a shooter. Dwight Howard's not a shooter. Like, they got a lot of guys going to play minutes who can't shoot the ball. That'll be, I mean, look, LeBron can shoot it fine for his position. So can AD, not Westbrook. But none of them are pure shooters. And the guy who's going to touch the ball least in the starting lineup is Wayne Ellington. Guess who the shooter is? Wayne Ellington. So, and Marc Gasol, who's a good shooter for his position. He ain't going to touch it that much. That'll be the reason, not because Westbrook is not a team player or something, but my prediction is Westbrook will struggle fitting in with the team in the first half. Because once again, new teammates, new responsibilities, got to figure it out. And in the second half, my prediction is Russell Westbrook will catch fire as he always does. Once he's figured out how to help the team, and he will be a great player in the second half, and he will change his game, he will change the emphasis of his game in different areas according to his teammates and what the team needs. That's my prediction, and that the Lakers, if they stay healthy, are going to get out of the West. Now, that's as far as it goes, unless the Nets get hurt, because that team's got too much firepower. But it's going to be a great series if it comes to it. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $700 on average. Your team making the playoffs? Your first round pick a bust? 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. Axe Max NFL Edition is next. 5G is here, but the big carriers want you to sign a pricey long-term contract to get in on the action. Well, not anymore. Because Straight Talk Wireless has rolled out 5G coverage nationwide with plans starting at just $35 a month with no contract. And get a Samsung Galaxy A32 5G for only $299, all on America's best networks, 5G coverage, 5G phones, less money, Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise, 5G-capable device required. Actual availability, coverage, and speed may vary. Axe Max coming up.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, Sirius XM Channel 80, 888-SAY-ESPN, 729-3776. All right, here we go. You got to ask me, everybody. Joseph in Maryland, you're on the Max Kellerman Show. Go!
Just want to talk about Tennessee Titans.
Go.
Big Tennessee Titans fan.
Mm-hmm.
Just want to say Tannehill will be the deciding factor of the Tennessee Titans' success this year.
You're saying he will have success?
No, he's going to be the deciding factor if the Titans have success this year.
I agree. Tannehill, I make all these arguments for Tannehill. He's on the outskirts of the MVP conversation, all that. But it reminds me when I was on Friday Night Fights on ESPN2 in the late 90s, and there was an excellent welterweight named Vernon Forrest. And I used to campaign for him to get a title shot because he was being avoided. He's already over 30 years old. None of the whatever, late 20s. No one wanted to fight him. And I campaigned for him to get a title shot. And he finally did against Shane Mosley, who was like the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world, the whole thing. And they were amateur rivals, but when everyone was picking Shane, including me. And it was like, I'm really bringing up Vernon, really because I want as an act of kind of like moral rectitude, not because I actually thought he'd win. But guess what? Vernon won. So, like, I feel the same thing about Tannehill. Like, I like to talk him up because I think he deserves it because he's played so well. But in the end, I'm never picking the Titans because I don't think Tannehill is actually a very, like, a top-most echelon guy. But what if it's like Vernon Forrest and I'm wrong? What if he's just steady Eddie and not spectacular, but he's that way in so many categories that he actually truly is great? You can't discount the possibility. John in Minnesota, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead, John. You're on. Go.
Hi. I was just calling to talk about the Minnesota Vikings this season. How do you think Justin Jefferson is going to do after a great rookie season?
He is elite talent. My issue is with Kirk Cousins. Like, what I just said about Tannehill, I can apply to Cousins, only more so, because I've never felt like Tannehill on the numbers or anything could be included in the upper echelon of quarterbacks. I do think he was a solid quarterback who maybe wouldn't hurt you from winning, but also I don't know how much he'd do to help you. And for most of his career, he was an empty calorie stat guy. I'd say recently he took a step forward, but between Cousins and Tannehill, I'll take Tannehill. And as I just said, I'm not sold on Tannehill as a Super Bowl quarterback. Now, I'll tell you this. Maybe I feel different if the Titans had a great defense, right? Because they got the offense, the running game. They have receivers now, the whole thing. Maybe if Tennessee had a defense, I would feel differently about Tannehill. So much of football is interrelated. And, you know, like the way we perceive players is so often based on who their teammates are. Kirk in Virginia, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. What you got to ask me? This is Ax Max.
I'll move it later in the morning.
Thank you.
Right.
Oh, look at that. Someone's ordering some food or something. You hear that? Tom in Idaho, you're on the Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
Max, I'm thinking after the Cam Akers injury, who's your favorite to win the NFC West? Is it still the Rams?
Yeah, it's still the Rams. I would say that Akers, I think Akers hurts them, but if I have to take a division winner, I'll still take the Rams over Seattle, whose defense should get better, but I still don't believe in, and whose offensive line isn't bad but isn't great, although they have the best quarterback, over Arizona, who I also think has taken strides, and I think Kyler Murray has a chance to be special this year. I think Arizona's going to surprise some people, and over San Francisco, who I think internally, my guess is, based on what I see, that they don't believe they're as close as others believe they are. But I look at the Rams, and Akers is a big hit to take, in my opinion. He was really coming through as like a top-level running back, and that was really going to help Stafford, especially on a Sean McVay team. But they got the offense, the offensive line. They have, and the offensive line determines the running game even more than the backs, I think. They have a bunch of really good receivers. They have a very talented quarterback and difference makers on defense. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.